You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. I'm Emily Means. I'm filling in for Leslie Thatcher this morning. The Summit County Council meets Wednesday to discuss a ban on plastic bags, social equity, and more. And joining us with a preview is Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Emily.
Very good to see you. And I'm glad that we're talking about one of our favorite topics up here, plastic bags.
Correct, yes.
This is something that came up a lot during the legislative session this year. And the Summit County Council will discuss a plastic bag ban after they've had many requests during public comment to institute one. Park City, of course, has a ban on thin plastic bags, and that's been in place since 2017. Why didn't the county get on board with this when Park City did?
I think it's a much broader issue in the county. We have more larger retailers, as well as the issue of do you include both all the areas of our county in something like this, or just the Snyderville Basin. That's just the beginning of the discussion. And then, of course, we've been watching the legislature for the past few years as well, in reaction to Park City doing that and not to support or not or support that. But the legislature, members of the legislature did put forth bills in the last two sessions to try and prevent local governments from doing that. The legislature did not put those laws in place. We're feeling a little bit more comfortable about talking about the issue. Certainly, the students that have been in and citizens over the last 2 years to talk about that to the council have had an effect, and that's why this subject is coming forward.
So, of course, not everyone supports this sort of thing. Have you also heard in public comment people who are against implementing a ban?
No, we haven't heard anything against it at this point. But, of course, we haven't had it in front of the council as a consideration item either. So, this is we actually prepared a lot of the materials around this about a year and a half ago. In anticipation that the council would want to bring it forward at some point. So they've asked for that. So this will be the first discussion and some information in front of the council to start get their reaction about if we did consider that as a local government, how would they like to see something crafted?
So the staff report really details the pros and cons of implementing a bag ban. What will be presented to council in that area?
Well, I think that the pros, cons that have been experienced, because certainly there's other states, other local governments that have done this around the country. I think a lot of that experience is presented in the staff report as well. To kind of see the range of how you could implement something like this, it's kind of there's two big broad categories of just an outright ban or charging fees around bags in order to de-incentivize the use of them. So I think that's going to be the discussion, is how to do that. And then of course we have Park City's experience too, which we have to decide whether we want to be somewhat consistent with that or exactly consistent with that to make it easier within the local area.
Do you have any idea what a program could look like? Because like you mentioned, would this be something throughout the county or
yeah.
just in Snyderville, or is it too soon to tell?
I think it's too soon to tell on that. I think the staff report really lays out a lot of options around that. Again, telling the pros and cons of some of that. And I think we'll develop more as it's discussed, because I think the council's going to have their ideas. Councilmember Armstrong asked a good question the last time this came up about communities that have instituted it and then taken it back. Why? What's the reason that they've done that? So I think we've got to have a lot of discussion before we go in a direction.
So the county does have some sustainable energy goals, and I know that they align themselves with Park City on the Community Renewable Energy Act from this past legislative session. Could this be a way to further those goals, or is this kind of separate from environmental goals?
It's certainly an environmental issue, and it could be broadly classed under that. But, we also operate the solid waste system in the community and run the landfills. And, plastic bags, when they're not weighted down, are light, they blow away. They cause problems that we then have to clean up. And so just from a very practical purpose, it's an interesting thing to consider in that way. But yes, we are very aware of the environmental impacts of plastic bags, of film plastic and other types of containers, whether they're filling up our landfills or whether they're just causing problems within our environment. And I'm sure those will all be discussion items.
So the council will also receive a presentation on the Park City Community Foundation's recently completed social equity strategic plan. What are the county's goals around social equity?
Well, I mean, you know, certainly we're interested in what Park City has forwarded and worked with the Park City Community Foundation on developing this plan. You know, just glancing through the document last night and this morning, it's already evident of, you know, both Park City and Summit County, the types of things that we're already doing that support goals within this plan. For instance, our support of the People's Health Clinic and the Park City support of that, the community's support of that. Also, the amount of time, effort, and a community support that's gone into mental wellness is just a couple of areas that this plan touches on that we're already heavily involved in. So I think part of the goal of hearing this is to just, you know, be very aware of what's going on in the community, you know, Park City being a piece of Summit County. And how, you know, how that interacts with the Snyderville Basin, being a very similar constituency, but then also see if there's opportunities for us to support.
Yeah, and you know, the Park City Council has set social equity as one of their four critical community priorities. Is that something that the County Council would be? They would maybe make a statement like that.
I don't know. You know, the county is a larger entity, and it has a lot more considerations, a lot more diverse population, and diversity of communities that has to be considered by the county council. So, you know, the county has its own strategic plan, which is very congruent with Park City and our other communities. I think that's the direction they're going. I think the awareness by the county council of this program and what Park City is trying to push helps us in our daily work.
Another thing on the agenda, the Eastern Summit County Water Conservancy District will consider annexing Indian Hollow, which is a project in South Summit, which has been in the planning stages since 2008. Tom, we've talked a lot about annexation recently, so I think this, you know, it kind of rings a bell, but
yeah.
How is this different from the larger conversation?
This is very different than say, some of the larger annexations, whether we're talking about Hideout or Mida or any of our communities. You know, simply several years ago, a sewer district was or a wastewater district was started in the east side of the county, anticipating that large developments would need a place to go at some point other than our municipalities, perhaps. In order to develop sewer in the future. Now, the Indian Hollow development had its own district to begin with, but once the waste district was set up and formalized by the council, that part of their development agreement was that they would annex into this. So this is kind of the last procedural step for that. They actually won't hook up to sewer right away. They will have their own collected treatment system for this development, but it has the ability to hook up to sewer in the future if it's available in that area.
What has been developed in this Indian Hollow area?
Very, very little, actually. So I think we anticipate that it will develop in the future, and they have some thresholds that they need to hit in order to put that collected system in, and that's a requirement before more development happens.
We just heard from a report from Rick Bruff that the county has closed on the Florence Gilmore parcel off Highway 40 Frontage Road. And under that deal, the Snyderville Recreation District got a portion of that property and also the nearby Triangle parcel. So this lease with the Gilmores will continue cattle grazing there?
Yeah, so there's been cattle grazing on these lands by the Gilmore family under leases with the larger Gilmore family. There's several land holdings in that area by different parts of the family. The Florence J. Gilmore Trust and Foundation had a lease with one of the parts of the family to graze on the 460 acres that they owned. We're just kind of transferring that lease and consolidating the leases between the Triangle parcel and the Florence J. Florence J. Gilmore property to be able to continue grazing and manage some of that land.
The lease ends at the end of December 2020, I think, which really isn't that far away. So what happens then?
Well, I think one of the reasons that we're Basin Rec is doing it that way is because they do plan on doing some recreation development out in that area, as the last news story talked about. So they want to have the flexibility to change that lease as it goes on and provide some predictability for those that are leasing that land as well.
Let's talk about another item that the Recreation District is considering. It's giving notice that it's going to raise the property tax rate. How much and for what?
Well, you know, I'm going to let Brian be the spokesperson for that as far as the details, because I don't want to get it wrong, first of all. But the main thing is that they are experiencing some increased pressures, especially with some of these open space purchases and the expansion of the trail system that require them to be able to maintain those into the future. And, you know, open space looks like it's lightly used, but it does take management, whether it be weeds, whether it be management of fences, those types of things. It still requires, there is a cost involved there. So I believe their board is looking at that and their overall workload in order to support that mill levy increase.
Well, and speaking of open space, the Recreation District is also considering a conservation easement. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, so there's an extensive amount of open space in the Toll Canyon area behind the Discovery Ridge housing development project. Different sets of ownership, whether it be Basin Rec or the county. If the county owns a piece of property that's open space, somebody else, and we put a conservation easement on it, somebody else has to be the holder of that easement. So the county's own portion of that is the Basin Rec holds the easement. Well, Basin Rec actually owns a parcel over there that they acquired in the last couple of years, and they're required to put a conservation easement on it, so the county will hold that. The public won't notice much difference in that, except that they'll all be managed the same way. They won't know which is which, but that's just the requirement of the conservation easements.
Probably better managed by this property tax increase, I would guess.
Well, I mean, I think certainly that property and what needs to be done in there to manage that, whether it's fire mitigation, again, weeds, weed management, and just trail management is partly responsible for asking for that.
The council is also considering approving some position changes at the Sheriff's Department and the library. Is there anything big here happening?
Not anything big. In the council's agenda a couple of weeks ago, the Sheriff's Office was in to talk about this. The council wanted us to go back and look at it a little closer. There's actually been some movement of some retirements within the Sheriff's Office that actually make this move a little easier, make it FTE neutral, budget neutral. So it's just a reorganization of FTEs and very similar to meeting some of the library board's goals, changing a full-time position into a couple of part-time positions in order to facilitate some other needs.
Tom, before I let you go, I want to throw in a bonus topic.
Sure.
We read in the Deseret News recently that Summit County ranks third for counties in Utah getting Airbnb income. I think they brought in $4.4 million of revenue for this summer season. So what is Summit County doing to kind of take inventory of these short-term rentals?
Yeah, so we've been working under a contract with Park City and the Chamber of Commerce. Park City is the main contract holder with a firm that is helping us identify properties that are essentially non-compliant from basically a business license point of view, and that's kind of the limit of what we can do in the state of Utah with nightly rental type activity. You'll recall that the state legislature and the tax commission have a kind of a what I would call a special deal with Airbnb on how revenue is collected from their properties and then remitted to the state that really local governments, besides sharing in that revenue, don't have much to do with. We're not privy to the details of that. We're not allowed to highly regulate nightly rentals because of state law. So the area that we can regulate is whether they have business licenses or not, and try and get those properties into compliance. And we've really just kind of started the process. We went through as part of the contract, development of the system so that this contractor could help us identify them, help us get mailings out to these property owners to try and come into compliance. And we're just kind of solidifying our systems around that before we really get heavily into it.
Well, the way I understand it, there are kind of two issues around Airbnb and nightly rentals. One, that there's no lodging tax, I think. Maybe you can explain a little bit better.
That's not exactly true. Okay. I mean, they are supposed to be remitting transient room tax, other types of sales taxes related to lodging, just as a lodging property does. And that's a responsibility of the property owner. And state law does not allow us as local governments to enforce anything around that. We can encourage, and I think we plan on doing that in the future. We'll be having discussions around that as we get people more, get these properties more in compliance with business licensing. But the other area that we can touch on with the county is through the assessor, whether they're a primary property or a secondary property, to make sure that from a property tax perspective, they're being assessed the correct way and being charged taxes the correct way.
Right. The other tricky thing, I know I'm keeping you a little bit longer than we anticipated, but is that, you know, these rooms could be used to be rented out year-round and potentially at more affordable rates.
I think that's probably one of the biggest changes within our housing inventory over the past 15 to 20 years is that, you know, you had stories on just as I was coming in about affordable and workforce housing, where a lot of these extra units or secondary properties or rooms within properties that people have extra probably used to be filled with workforce. Were more affordable because there was more of them. The inventory is much lower now because of nightly rental business. Certainly, that's part of what we're trying to get a handle on in the broader perspective by neighborhood and by Park City, by Summit County, by our other communities to understand what's happening with our housing inventory around that. Eventually, we'll be talking about, what's the right way to do it? I mean, we can't regulate. The state has told us that, so we just have to understand it better.
Is this an issue that the county might lobby the legislature on?
I think we're always going to be talking to the legislature about that. I think the statement by the legislature and how they've limited regulation has been pretty strong, so we'll continue to talk about it, though.
All right, Tom, I'll let you go. Thank you so much for
Thank
coming
you.
In. The Peace House is opening its new community campus to continue supporting survivors of domestic violence. Here with details about the grand opening is Peace House board member Karen Marriott. Good morning, Karen.
Good morning, Emily. Thanks for having us.
Thanks so much for coming in. So congratulations on this huge occasion. How long has the new campus been in construction?
Oh, we've been in construction for over a year and a half. We just moved in our first clients yesterday, actually, which is really exciting. And we got our certificate of occupancy a little later than expected, and so everybody's been hustling and hands on deck, and the place looks beautiful, and we cannot wait to invite the community in this weekend. Our ribbon-cutting ceremony starts at 9 a.m., and so the whole community is invited. Anybody who would like to attend, we have so many supporters that have given their time, talents, and resources, and so we're inviting everybody to come. We have Lieutenant Governor Cox who will say a few words. Kendra will say a few words. I'll say a few words. We'll be able to give people tours through the public areas and as well as our transitional housing because that's not up and running yet. But we're so excited to show everybody this campus that really our community is built.
So why don't you tell us a little bit why there was a need to expand the Peace House's space and services?
Well, we have been at an undisclosed location for the last almost 25 years, and that location only had 5 bedrooms, which could accommodate maximum of 15 people. Our new facility has 8 emergency shelter units that can accommodate up to 24 people. We have 12 transitional housing units, which is totally new and really exciting for these families that have suffered abuse, and just to give them a little more time to get back on their feet, and that can accommodate up to 36 people. So we're really quadrupling our capacity. Last year we had 232 unmet requests for shelter. And, you know, those are people that we could give them outreach services, provide therapy, try to find them other shelters. But, you know, we could not keep up with the demand. It's pretty amazing. Our statistic in Utah is 1 in 3 women will be a victim of domestic abuse. And when you think that, it affects so many families. And we don't just offer shelter. The clinical hours that we offer, we have expanded those number of hours. That's free counseling to families that are going through abuse. We also offer case management. Last year, we offered 2,299 hours of free therapy and case management. This putting everything under one roof will make us much more efficient and effective, much more accessible. You know, our tagline was out of the shadows and into the light, and we are literally in the light. We are in this beautiful new building through the generosity of so many people, and we are situated right between the People's Health Clinic, who's one of our community partners, and Intermountain's Park City Hospital is one of our community partners. And, you know, we're in a place where people can come, and with, you know, modernization and security systems, I mean, it's a much safer place, actually. Even though it's out and people can find it, it's a safer place with all the different levels of security that we have for anybody to come in and get the help they need.
Well, I want to talk about that a little bit more because, like you mentioned, a lot of these sorts of services around, helping survivors of domestic abuse tend to be in the shadows and at an undisclosed location to keep those people safe. Why is it different, and why does it feel different to kind of have this so out in the open?
Well, it is not a place, you know, having been a victim of domestic abuse, it is not, there's no shame. And I think that kind of you're hiding out, you're isolated, it creates like that there should be some shame involved, and there is no shame. And we want to be there to help. And these people are members of our community. It is not a respecter of persons. It is across the board. It is, people say, what does the typical person look like? And there is no typical person. It affects all levels of society. And so we just want to have it visible so that we can truly break that cycle of domestic abuse and, welcome people in to get the care that they need. And there is no shame behind that.
I think Executive Director Kendra Wyckoff just walked in. Good morning.
Good morning.
Glad to have you.
Thank you.
How do you feel having this campus open and available, and you've already got some people who've settled in?
Well, it's such a historic milestone for our organization and for our community, and I think Karen's really touched on a lot of the really important factors around being an accessible and visible campus. really working to reduce the shame of being a, you know, a victim of domestic violence, and removing that stigma and creating a place where people know that there's an entire community of support here with wraparound services to help you work to rebuild your life, to increase your safety and increase your independence, and move to a place where you're feeling safe and peaceful.
Kendra, I know you just walked in, but I wanted to throw a topic to you because we're heading into October soon, which I think is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. And I've been hearing a lot about the Violence Against Women Act recently, which turned 25 this week. This is a federal law that provides funding to grant programs that aim to end domestic violence, but funding for the bill has stalled recently in Congress. So I'm wondering what kind of programs this funding supports at the Peace House, if you have that off the top of your head.
Right. No, I think that's a great question. The Violence Against Women Act has really been instrumental in supporting issues that impact women in particular. But over the years, you know, the legislation has really expanded to make it a very inclusive bill. So that's really important because anyone can be affected by domestic violence. At Peace House, we are recipients of VAWA, STOP funding, which is funding that comes from the Violence Against Women Act into the state and is administered by the State Office for Victims of Crime. And that specific funding supports our legal advocacy program and some of our awareness programming here in our communities in Summit and Wasatch County. So it's very critical. We've also applied for some other funding to help support our transitional housing, our new transitional housing program. We're still waiting to hear if we'll be recipients of that funding. But what we know is that funding has been truly instrumental in supporting resources and services in our communities, both in community-based programs like Peace House, within systems, the criminal justice system. It's been instrumental in boosting resources so that law enforcement and prosecutors have the resources that they need to be able to successfully support survivor safety and offender accountability. And it's critical legislation. It really helps communities focus on these issues, put resources in place, as well as creates legislation that protects survivors. So there's some additional legislation in there, you know, that certainly helps buoy up and support survivor safety with regard to federal crimes across federal jurisdictions.
If this legislation funding isn't reauthorized, how could that impact Peace House services?
Right. Well, it could, you know, stall funding for programs for Peace House and other community-based programs and other initiatives in our community. So it's a very critical piece of legislation. I encourage people to reach out, you know, to your representatives and let them know that this is an issue that you see as a priority in our community and that you want to see reauthorization of VAWA.
Let's remind people about Saturday's ribbon cutting. Karen, you want to give us the details once more?
Yeah, 9 a.m. we'll have a short ceremony, and then we'll be serving some breakfast, and we'll have tours of our transitional housing wing, as well as all of our community spaces, our child care. These are some of our new programs that we've added, and we are just thrilled to be able to invite the community in to see what they've helped us build.
Well, congratulations on your new space. Again, that's the grand opening for the Peace House's new community campus. Kendra and Karen, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Thanks, Emily.
You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. I'm Emily Means. Recycle Utah has a number of events coming up in the next month, from a program on composting to a hazardous waste collection. And here with the details is Recycle Utah Communications Director Haley Lebsack. Good morning.
Good morning, Emily. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much for being here. So coming up first this week is a composting lunch and learn.
Correct. So tomorrow, Wednesday, the 18th at noon at our center at Recycle Utah, we'll be hosting an hour-long lunch and learn with our education director, Mary. Food scraps make up about a third of our garbage, so a third of our landfill, and it's a very easy thing to take away from to compost. You can do fruit, veggie scraps, coffee grounds, eggshells, leaves, grass clippings, all that kind of good stuff. And I'm a lazy composter, I say.
What does that mean?
I kind of throw my stuff in the compost and like turn it every once in a while. And when Mary reminds me I should like throw some water on it, I throw some water on it. But we keep all of our food waste out of the garbage bin. It takes very little effort on my part. Mary is an expert on it. She'll answer all questions. And if you attend, you do get a discount on our composters and our kitchen storage bins.
And then after that, let's see, at the end of the month, we have dumpster days.
Yes, it is fall cleanup time. So Thursday through Saturday, September 26th through 28th, at Recycle Utah again, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m., we do have dumpster days. For those that are not familiar, dumpster days, we have at the center one bin for yard waste and one bin for household garbage waste. So this doesn't include like hazardous materials, electronics, mattresses, that kind of stuff. It's only things that you could also throw away in your curbside bin, but maybe you're just a little too big, like a toilet or an old couch or something like that. It is for Summit County residents only, no business waste. We are a nonprofit, so we do pay every time those bins are hauled. So we ask that businesses respect that. It does end at 4 p.m. Cars must be unloaded by 4 p.m., so please show up by 3:30 p.m.
You mentioned there's no hazardous waste allowed at dumpster days, but that's because you've got a hazardous waste collection day.
Yeah, good segue. That same weekend, Saturday, September 28th at the Canyons parking lot, we do have a household hazardous waste collection day for Summit County residents. Again, it runs from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Just like dumpster days, show up by about 12:30. At 1 p.m., we close the line. We've got to get out of the parking lot. We have to respect the Canyons for donating that space. So I do tell people plan on being there by 12:30. This is a big event. We collaborate with Sunrise Rotary, Snyderville Basin Water Reclamation District, Summit County, and Park City Municipal. So there's a lot of parts involved. This is where you bring that paint, the e-waste, cleaning chemicals, medicines, batteries, no tires, no refrigerators, no ski equipment. Springback mattress will be recycling mattresses. That's a $10 charge. It is the only thing we directly charge for, but we do ask for donations. This event costs us about $70 a car, and we see on average about 400 to 500 cars at this event. So for a nonprofit, that's a huge chunk of change. If you have any questions on what we do take or do not take specifically at that event, everything can be found at recycleutah.org.
And we will link that to our website. Haley, one more thing, a celebration at the beginning of October.
Yes, so we can do all the cleanup stuff, all the business stuff. And then Harvest Fest is October 5th at DeJoria Center at High Star Ranch. That's our last big fundraiser of the year. It is a free family event. We have local vendors with crafts, jewelry, art, that kind of stuff. Hay rides, kids activities, sponsored by Mark Miller Subaru and partnering with the Kimball Art Center. So they'll be doing a recycled craft for kids. We have live music, food trucks, drinks, and of course, the famous, famous Rotary apple pies will be for sale as well.
That sounds delicious. After you've done all that dirty work, you know, you got to find a way to
celebrate. Exactly.
All right. Haley Lebsack from Recycle Utah. Thanks so much for coming in and giving us the update.
Thank you.
We spoke earlier with Summit County Manager Tom Fisher about the possibility of enacting a plastic bag ban in Summit County. And now we're joined by some of the students whose public comments landed the item on Wednesday's council agenda. We're here with Sonia. Sonia, say hi.
Hi.
Hi. And then also Shiva. Hi, Shiva.
Hello.
And then Mary Klosser from Recycle Utah.
Hello.
Good morning. Thanks so much for coming in. So Sonia and Shiva, maybe you can first start by telling us how you got involved in working towards this plastic bag ban.
So me, Sonia, and two other girls from our school, we decided to start this because the plastic is devastating in our earth and stuff. So we wanted to try to change that.
Yeah, and Sonia, why did you think this was an important topic?
Well, since we're so young, I wanted to create a sustainable future for our generation, and I can't do something huge right away. Our group can't do something huge right away, so we wanted to start with kind of a smaller step, so we decided to start attending council meetings, start writing editorials, and try to ban plastic bags in our county.
Do you live in Park City or out further in Summit County?
I live in Coville, but she lives in Park City.
Yeah, I live here in Park City, Park Meadows.
Did you know about Park City's plastic bag ban, and did that kind of inspire you to think about this?
Yes, definitely.
Okay, you know, you've gone to some county council meetings, like you mentioned. I saw that you've written letters to the editor in the newspaper and have talked with council members about this issue. What was it like to start engaging like that? Were you nervous? Did you know what to do?
I had no idea what to do. It was really kind of nerve-wracking at first, like our first council meeting in front of all of those people. And it was nice to see that they actually listened to us.
Yeah, it was pretty nerve-wracking, but it was nice because we had a speech prepared. So that took a bit of nervousness out of the whole situation, but it was still pretty nerve-wracking.
So you all are in sixth grade at Ecker Hill, right?
Yes.
And there are a lot of young people nowadays speaking out against climate change and other environmental issues. What do your classmates think about the plastic bag ban or other environmental issues?
Well, we had some classmates last year that were interested in it, but they never really stuck with it, and they never really came to any council meetings. So they just kind of fell out of our group. But I think if we kind of tried a bit harder to get new members, that a lot of our classmates would be very interested.
A lot of our teachers thought about coming to our council meetings as well, like our counselor and our Spanish teacher, and some other teachers wanted to come and join our group.
What have you learned about plastic bags' impact to the environment?
Well, before this, I knew a lot of the worldwide statistics about plastic, but ever since I've started doing this, I've learned a lot about the things that are happening in Utah. For example, pretty recently, a couple months ago, there were some deer that ingested plastic near a landfill in Utah, and they died. So that's kind of a signal that it's not just happening in the news, like where you hear it. It's happening here, too.
Mary, let's bring you in here. Why is Recycle Utah kind of teaming up with these students?
Well, one of my goals is to reach out to students and help them have a voice. And I think what has happened in the last 8 months shows that students do have a voice, and they're probably listened to more than anybody.
Do you think so?
I do. I mean, it just shows that there is a reason to be an activist, because eventually people will listen.
Why do you think kids, Shiva and Sonia's age, are getting involved in these issues?
Because it's so important to them, and I think it's important to a lot of people, but they don't know how to reach out and speak up. And so I feel my role as a teacher in the school district of environmental education is to find these students who do want to speak up and guide them.
Do your parents use plastic bags at the grocery store?
No. Yeah, mine don't. We always bring our own reusable bags. Also, when we started to go to Hawaii, we got in the habit of packing our own reusable bags because they have a statewide bag ban.
My mom, she's really into recycling and into being sustainable, and we always bring our own bags and stuff like that.
Some people, may not have those reusable bags, or... if they happen to enact a tax on using plastic bags or something like that, that might be a little less accessible to lower income people who are going to grocery stores and things. Why do you think people should maybe still try to make an effort to use reusable bags and not use plastic bags?
In the long run, plastic production is pretty big. Like, it costs a lot of money. So in the long run, when you buy the bag, the reusable bags, they eventually will save you money. And plus the fees that you have to cost, like the ones that at the market are 10 cents, and that adds up. So if you have your own reusable bag, it helps in the long run.
Well, Shiva and Sonia, what do you want to say to other people your age who might not feel like they have a voice on issues they care about?
Well, I think if you're not ready to do something like this, then you can just do like simple things like bring your own reusable bags, or like if you see some plastic and you could either use it or not use it, choose to not use it. Just little things. You don't have to go in front of a council meeting. You don't have to try to ban plastic bags in Summit County. You can just do little things that save plastic.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Sonia, Shiva, and Mary. We really appreciate you coming in. And are you going to be at the county council meeting tomorrow?
Yes. Yes, we'll be at the county council meeting.
Indeed.
All right. Well, good luck to you. And thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you.